Title of my talk today is Wi-Fi NC, Wi-Fi on narrow channels. So what's the talk about? It's basically about a new way of designing Wi-Fi radios. Basically, that's what you should keep in mind. Now, what's this new thing? If you look at a conventional radio today, so what I'm going to do is sort of give a high level overview of what are the big differences, right? So if you look at a conventional radio today, typically it uses one channel at any given time, in the sense that if it has a 20 megahertz channel, it'll probably use the channel for transmitting, receiving, and so on, but only the entire bandwidth will be used at any given time. What Wi-Fi NC radio does is basically it is able to use several multiple channels independently, which are narrower than the entire band. So it could be receiving in one of these channels, it could be transmitting on the other, and so on. So that's one difference. Now, typically, devices transmit or receive. They don't do both at the same time. Recently, there has been a lot of work on full duplex, though. What Wi-Fi NC radio does is, because it has all these independent channels, it could be receiving on one of the channels, transmitting on the other, and so on, right? So node A could be transmitting to B and C simultaneously, receiving from B and C, for example, as given in this example. But why do all this? Why design a radio which can do this sort of stuff? It turns out it has three key benefits. One is it improves efficiency of Wi-Fi. The second is it helps in coexistence. And the third, it can help you do better spectrum access in non-contiguous spectrum. So I'll now go over all these things in detail. So if you look at how Wi-Fi has been evolving, since the standard came, standard was created in 1988, is initially there was about 6 Mbps. In 2000, then it went up to 54 Mbps with 64 QAM and OFDM and so on, and then came MIMO. It shot up even further. Now we have roughly 600 Mbps. So what you're basically seeing is almost 100x increase in data rates over the past decade. So that's one trend that you're seeing. But that 100x increase doesn't necessarily translate to 100x increase in throughputs. Let's see why that is. So let's look at a simple case where there's a single node it's trying to transmit its packet. It finds that the channel is free to transmit. Upon finding it, it has to do this medium access. Essentially, it waits for a random period of time so that it can give opportunity to other potentially competing nodes to sort of transmit here. And the average time here is roughly 100 microseconds. After this, it starts transmitting the packet. The packet comprises a preamble, which is essential for the receiver to sort of tune itself and receive the packet correctly. That's around, let's say, 20 microseconds. And then let's say it sends out a 1,500 byte packet, which takes around 200 microseconds. And then, of course, you need to send and receive an acknowledgement from the receiver saying it has correctly received it. So this is the entire anatomy of a packet transmission. And if you look at this, the useful part is just that red part there. The rest of it is all essentially overheads. And in this example, that's about 60%. Now let's look at what happens if you bump up the data rate dramatically, right? So here, this is 600 Mbps. Now, all these overheads here haven't really changed much. Even though the data rate has increased, I mean, this is the red part that has shrunk. So if you look at what the useful part of this entire transmission is, only 10%, essentially. So in general, essentially what it means is, given the same amount of data that you have to transmit over a single packet, essentially the efficiency decreases with increasing rates. Now, by slicing this spectrum, by having narrower independent channels, Wi-Fi NC can actually get more efficiency in the following way, right? So here, this is how the initial transmission was going on. This was the CSMA part. This was the part where the packet was being transmitted at 600 Mbps and so on. Now, instead of doing this, what you do is you parallelly send all these packets at lower data rates. So now you've got narrower channels which operate at lower data rates. And so the ratio of this red part to the entire overhead is still much better. So you actually get back the efficiency that you had lost. So essentially, that's what it does. It uses several low data rate narrow channels instead of a single wide channel. Now, let's recall the trend, right? So we had these increasing data rates. Now, where did this come from? So at 6 Mbps, you were able to pack in roughly 0.3 bits per second per hertz in the channel. Then, of course, the efficiency went up, and you were able to stuff 2.7 bits per second per hertz. Now you are able to stuff 15 bits per second per hertz. So essentially, you're stuffing more and more bits in the same part of the spectrum. Now, as things, as you try to stuff more and more bits, it gets harder and harder, obviously. So now what, I mean, if you look at what the newer standards are doing, are they're basically suggesting let's widen the channels. Let's actually increase the width of the channel so that we can pump out more bits. Now, for example, 802.11ac is suggesting 80 and 160 megahertz channels, essentially. So what our contention is that this is not the right way to go, basically, because if you see what happens is the coexistence actually breaks down. So let me give a simple example of this. Let's say you've got a node A, which uses a 40 megahertz channel. You've got node B and node C that use 20 and 20 megahertz each, but these are non-overlapping channels. So node B and node C cannot actually sense each other. But node A can actually sense both node B and C. So initially, let's suppose that B was transmitting and C was also transmitting. And at some point in time, C finishes its transmission. Now what it does is, like a good node, I mean, like a reasonable citizen, essentially it waits for some time trying to give opportunity for node A to transmit. But node A cannot transmit because it finds that B is still transmitting. Now after some time, of course, C gives up and starts transmitting again. The same thing happens again at B, and what ends up happening is A never gets a chance, right, to send. So it actually basically starves. So this is the problem, right? I mean, if you have devices with wide channels and narrow channels, they can't really coexist very well. Now, what do existing standards do about this, right? So they go into this backward compatibility mode where upon sensing a narrower band, essentially overlapping, the device actually shrinks itself down and starts using a narrower channel. That's what they do today. So they're basically not being able to use the entire width. Now, what does Wi-Fi NC do? So what it does is basically instead of using the entire 80 megahertz, it would use, let's say, four independent 20 megahertz channels. So now you've got three nodes here where you've got 80 megahertz and 20 megahertz each. And so in the parts of the spectrum where node A doesn't have any competitors or any other sharing, it is able to use the entire 20 megahertz. And in the parts where there is node B, node C, for example, it's able to evenly share between the nodes. So that's where it helps. Now, another trend is with white spaces, what's happening is, if you look at the ISM band, right, so you've got a big chunk of spectrum and you are free to use it. In case of white spaces, though, that's not entirely clear, right? Because you might have TV transmitters and so on. It turns out that finding a big chunk of contiguous spectrum may be really hard. And so you end up with this fragmented spectrum where there are TV channels and you have some spaces in between that you can use and so on. So to solve this problem, essentially, there have been prior solutions which use flexible channel width. What Wi-Fi NC is able to do, because it can sort of use all these use parts of the spectrum, is that it can sort of transmit around these busy parts of the spectrum. So that's the other advantage that you get. So now let me quickly go over the design of Wi-Fi NC. So before getting into so the design is actually a five-layer design, right? So you need to fundamentally change the way radios are designed. So I'll give a very small idea about how radios are today. So a typical radio has two parts, right? So there's an analog front end, which is primarily responsible for creating the channels and frequency down conversion from the carrier frequency, which is 2.4 gigahertz, back to down to the baseband and so on. And then you've got a DAC, ADC, because it's analog to digital here in this receiver. And then most of the processing happens in the digital domain, like MIMO, OFDM, Viterbi, decoding and so on, all the QAM64, et cetera, all happens on there. Because this is extremely computation intensive. Now, the key change that we do in Wi-Fi NC is we do digital channelization. So in the sense, after you get your wide band, so let's say your analog radio, so you don't change anything in the analog radio or analog radio front end, right? So you take it as is. Let's say the entire bandwidth of this is, let's say, 80 megahertz or something like that. You take the entire signal and then you actually break it up into channels digitally in the baseband. So that's basically what you do. Now, a key question here that comes is, what kind of guard bands do you need? And as I'll discuss further, basically we can work with very thin guard bands between these narrow channels. So we call this radio the compound radio, essentially. So let's look at a key scenario in Wi-Fi NC, right? So you've got three nodes here, and there are these so-called transmitterlets. So these transmitterlets each operate over a narrow channel. So let's say you've got four transmitterlets, 5 megahertz each. So node A might be receiving simultaneously from two different nodes here, completely independent transmissions. There is no synchronization. Node B actually got its access using CSMA and it started transmitting. Node C did the same and they're actually receiving. Now, simultaneously, it might be sending to node B and C using the transmitter LED. So this is the sort of scenario we want to enable using Wi-Fi NC. So the key challenge here is that there should be no crosstalk between channels. So if you think about it, right, it's the same analog front end. There's only one physical radio, right? There's only one band, and so there could be crosstalk between what you're sending, what you're receiving from different nodes and so on. So that's what you want to minimize. So let's look at what's happening in a simple example here. So you've got three nodes here, A, B, and C. A is sending to B and C and receiving from B and C at the same time. And I've indicated different colors here, and this is showing the interference levels that you see at node A because of all these transmissions. Now, this is A's own transmission, so it's actually pretty high here compared to the received transmissions from B and C, which might be really far away, right? If you could see here, right, this is the part that is really going to cause a problem for receiving B and C, essentially. So that's the self interference of this node. So typically, I mean, for example, if a Wi-Fi node will have, let's say, 20 dBm, that's the advertised power, but what actually comes out of the antenna and what you see is more around minus 20 to minus 10 dBm. And by the time you cross the channel, if you have a small guard band, the power has actually come down a little bit, and then you've got to cancel all this. To actually receive this as if there was no, sorry, as if there was absolutely no, yeah, as if there was absolutely no interference from this guy, you have to attenuate this whole thing down to the noise floor, essentially. So which means that you need roughly 60 dB isolation in this example. Now, how do we achieve this? We don't, essentially what we do is what traditionally analog radios do, which is they actually use an analog filter to do this, but we use a digital filter. And what we use is elliptic filters, which actually are really good. So this table actually shows how computation intensive they are, for example, comparing with other filters. So they're extremely efficient, and we actually implemented a bunch of different filters. There are filters that can actually give you up to even 80 dB within 100 kilohertz at a very small increase, in computation cost. So this is basically what we use. So basically what's going to happen is the transmitter is going to have a filter bank, and it's going to basically marshal the entire spectrum into these small slices and make sure that what it's transmitting is not leaking out. Now, this is not just sufficient, right? So even at the receiver side, you need these filters because you want to basically make sure that in your entire analog front end, you just want to capture the part that is relevant to that particular receiver LED. So that's basically what's happening here. So both transmitter and receiver actually have got this elliptic filter banks, which are making sure that data goes out. So this is sort of the high-level architecture of how the transceiver LED and the receiver LED work. So this is the transmitter LED. So basically you get these five channels independently from the MAC, and then they're upsampled because it has to be sent at the high sampling rate of the wide channel. Digital filters work on them. And then you use digital up and down converters up converters here to just move it by the appropriate megahertz. And then finally they're all added and sent out to the analog radio. So that's what happens here. The architecture of the receiver is actually quite similar. I mean, in fact, in the implementation, most of the stuff, I mean, it's so replicatable that when you design a circuit, you can just replicate the whole circuit one after the other. It's actually pretty easy to do once you've designed one. So the receiver works the same way. It has a down conversion here, and then you have digital filters. It's downsampled so that the rate actually matches the low data rate of the channel and so on. So this is the high-level architecture. Now, this all seems very easy, but once you've done that, a lot of new challenges start to pop up, right? So the first challenge that we faced is, after you actually put these sharp filters, the sharp filters actually increase the time response. So whenever you reduce and marshal spectrum in the time domain, essentially the signal expands. And what that is, that's something similar to what happens in multipath. So essentially you send something and it rings for a long time, right? So that's one problem that we had to deal with. And there are a couple of ways to get around this problem. And for example, there are two key ways to do this, right? The first is you could have equalizers at the receiver. And the second is you could actually use longer symbols in such a way that, so basically instead of using 64 subcarriers, you use a larger number of subcarriers. So the ringing is actually encompassed within the cyclic prefix. But in our implementation, we didn't do the equalizers. We just implemented the longer subcarriers. Now, once you do that, the other thing that happens is potential slot dilation and preamble dilation. So if you think about it, right, in a narrower channel, you're actually transmitting information at a lower rate. So you cannot fundamentally send it faster. So what ends up happening is all the preambles that you were sending earlier also have to expand. But it turns out that there's some good thing about this is that not all parts of the preamble actually expand equally. I mean, there are some parts of the preamble that expand and some part of the preambles that don't expand. So I won't go into the details here, the details are in the paper. But this has an interesting implication. So the moment you start expanding preambles, these preambles are used for a lot of things. For example, the slot width in Wi-Fi, in standard Wi-Fi is 9 microseconds, and it's critically governed by the fact that you need to do CCA in 4 microseconds, and that is enabled by the preamble. So the moment your preamble is elongated, you have to actually worry about the fact the slots will also get elongated. And if slots also get elongated, then you're back to the same problem because essentially you take longer to do the CCA. But there are a couple of ways of getting around this. One way is to actually decouple the CCA part from other functions of the preamble. And the second is another way where basically you use self-interference cancellation to sort of parallelize preamble detection and packet transmission. So something called speculative transmissions, which was another piece of work we did in Wi-Fi Nano. Besides this, of course, you have to worry about processing overheads, right? Because now you've got a bunch of receivers, you've got a bunch of transmitters, each of them is independently doing a lot of decoding and so on. So what it turns out that even though, let's say you've got N transmitters and N receivers, each of these N transmitters and N receivers are actually working at an N times lower data rate than the data rate of the channel, which means that you can have a clock that actually runs at 1 nth the rate. So what ends up happening is basically each of these guys is working N times slower and you've got N of them. So the total processing overhead really doesn't change a whole lot, even though memory requirements might go up. So for that, we do the downsampling and we use fractional data rate processing. Besides these, there's one practical challenge, which is ADC bit limitations. So one of the things is that in order to be able to convert from A to D and D to A, you need to have the dynamic range in your ADC bits. And if the self-interference is overwhelmingly large and you don't have enough bits in the ADC, it can actually stop you from receiving weak signals. So I won't go into the details of this. I can explain offline. But basically, to solve this problem, you have to use something called analog interference cancellation, where the basic idea is that you know what you're transmitting. And so if you subtract that from what you are receiving, then you could potentially bring down the effects of your own interference. So let's look at how Wi-Fi and C can be used in white spaces. So the key difference between white spaces and non-white spaces is the fact that spectrum may be fragmented. Wi-Fi and C can automatically sort of route around these parts of the spectrum that's occupied. But another key thing is the need to actually find good parts of the spectrum. So that's one key requirement operation in white spaces. And what we have in the paper, though I won't go into the details, is the TMAX algorithm. And because of the fact that it uses independent channels, essentially it's able to come up with an optimal scheme where it can maximize the throughput of all the nodes. So essentially, the algorithm is described in the paper, but what it lets you do is come up with this easy algorithm which can actually let you, and the rule is very simple. There is an objective function defined here, and the rule is find the leftmost frequency such that this particular objective function is maximized. If you just follow that, it turns out that it's optimal for all the nodes in the network. So let's look at how Wi-Fi NC performs. We implemented Wi-Fi NC on an FPGA-based platform called Lyrtec, and in this example, I want to show the coexistence of a narrow band and a wide band. So one of these nodes, T2, is actually a wide band. It's using, I'm almost done. So it's actually using two narrow channels, 5 megahertz each. And there's another one which is using just 5 megahertz. So these measurements here are actually the individual data rates that you achieve when you send 16 QAM at 3x4 rate. And these are the throughputs that you get when actually all of them are transmitting together. So what you see is the upper part of the channel is being completely utilized because there's no sharing, and the lower part of the spectrum is actually being shared. So that shows that you can actually have coexistence between wide and narrow bands. This is another experiment that we did, where basically we wanted to show that Wi-Fi NC actually avoids starvation. So here you've got the traditional Wi-Fi node which uses the whole band, and it's sharing with two different non-overlapping bands. So if you notice here, its throughput has really dropped down, whereas these two nodes, B and C, are able to transmit. When you switch to Wi-Fi NC, the sharing happens almost equally in all the two parts of the spectrum in the nodes, and the aggregate throughput is still high. This shows basically the efficiency of a single link in Wi-Fi NC, and what this shows essentially is how if you increase the number of narrow channels, efficiency keeps going up. So the narrower you make the channel, efficiency keeps going up here. But the caveat is, of course, that there is an overhead to be paid because of narrow bands. And in our case, it was 100 kilohertz, so the efficiency still went up. This basically is a simulation result which essentially shows that you can get up to an increase from 25% to 75% increase using Wi-Fi NC under different scenarios. And finally, what we did was we tried to quantify the benefits that you can get from Wi-Fi NC in white spaces. Now, there are two reasons why you might get a benefit in white spaces. The first is the simple fact that it actually performs better than Wi-Fi. And the second is the fact that it's able to efficiently find better parts of the spectrum for using it. This part of the gain actually shows the gain that you can get from Wi-Fi NC because of the fact that it's actually using narrower channels. And this one shows the gains that you get if you try to find. And to explain the simulation framework, basically what we did is we looked at the Seattle area, and we basically took all the TV channels that are being used there, and we used that part of the spectrum to sort of guide which part of the spectrum should be used and so on. So finally, there is some related work, which is there was prior work which sort of is on similar lines, but not entirely so, which is FICA, which basically what it does is it uses the structure of the OFDM to sort of send data over different parts of the spectrum, but they're not independent in the sense that each of these cannot do CSMA, which means independently and so on, transmit and receive independently and so on, which means that it does not address coexistence and requires all the devices to be synchronized. Finally, there's a lot of full duplex work which is being done and which can be actually used in parallel. And so basically you could use Wi-Fi NC and full duplex in conjunction. So thanks a lot. That's pretty much it. If you have any questions.
Aaron Gember, University of Wisconsin. So it appears that you're making the assumption that the same spectrum is available at all nodes. Is that correct?
No, I'm not actually. So nodes could be using different parts of the spectrum. There's no such assumption. Why do you ask this question? So what was the...
So I guess you're concerned with, you know, how they're sharing and things like that. And I guess, do you run into fairness issues then if they're all using different
parts? Yeah. So the whole design is actually meant to address fairness, right? So let's say you've got node A, which is sort of accessing some part of the spectrum, and another node B, which is accessing another part of the spectrum. Even if there's an overlap between the two, they will share fairly in that overlapped part. So that's what Wi-Fi NC allows you to do. So they could be using different parts of the spectrum, but in the overlap part of the spectrum, they'll use spectrum fairly. They'll share it fairly.
Yeah. Hi, Shuman Banerjee, University of Wisconsin also. So because you're using narrow channels, you know, most of the time when we're trying to send data at high rates, the headers still usually tend to go at, or the preamble and other things, tend to go at the lower data rate, even relative to the data,
the
body, right? So my question is, because now you have many of these in parallel, what kind of, what percentage of overall, of the data is now the overheads in terms of headers
and such? Yeah, let me answer that. That's a very good question. Actually, I took it out of the presentation just for the sake of time. So let's basically, there are several functions that a typical header does, right? The first thing that it does is it does automatic, it has to allow for automatic gain control at the receiver. So it needs to reliably estimate the energy. So that is a function of the number of samples that are being received at the receiver. Then there is synchronization and frequency offset estimation, which is done at the receiver. Now this part has to expand, and the reason is to perform synchronization reliably, you need a fixed amount of energy, which means when you reduce the rate, you get less number of samples, which means you have to elongate that part of the preamble. And then there is also the channel gain estimation that's done, but that does not expand because your channel itself has narrowed down, so the number of parameters that you need to send is also proportional to that, so that doesn't change. Neither the MIMO related parameters, because now you've reduced everything, right? So that doesn't change. So basically what happens is this only the four, so if you look at a typical preamble, which is, let's say, 20 microseconds, the first 4 microseconds is going to expand. The rest of it is going to remain the same, essentially. So we did have to do that when we implemented it. So this basically shows how things are going to change, how the preamble is going to change.
Is that to scale? Just
no, it was my PPT thing, so I was just, yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask one quick question as well, if I could.
Yeah.
So it looks like you had one radio front end in your design, but then you were replicating some structures in your design. Do you have any thoughts on what the cost, what the effect on cost would be on radios if we sort of took some spectrum, chopped it up into some number of pieces? How much more expensive would a radio that uses many pieces be versus one that just used one contiguous piece?
Yeah. So actually, I mean, since we've not manufactured chips, I don't know exactly how the costs work in ASIC design and so on. But I can give some idea, right? So basically, the analog front end comes with all the active filters and all the costly stuff. But the digital part, I hope, is taking all the Moore's law into account, and it's getting cheaper. I mean, for example, if you look at the way FPGAs have grown for the same cost in the last, I mean, from Vertex 3 to whatever, Vertex 6 and 7 now, there has been like a huge 300x sort of explosion, right? So I'm hoping that will save. But yes, so basically, definitely the space that you have to fit definitely increases, because you have to use, so for example, if you take the simple thing in OFDM, the FFT, right, the IFFT that you have to do. Now, because the number of samples are less, you have to do a smaller IFFT. So that part remains the same, but if you talk about Viterbi decoding and so on, you have to maintain the state for every single receiver, which means the state is going to go up. So processing overheads don't, but the state definitely goes up because you have to maintain that, yeah. So it's linear in the number of transmitter lists and receiver lists,
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Well, time for one more quick one.
Study like which shows that the number of narrow channels versus throughput?
Yeah. So that's the graph I quickly went over, actually. Let me go there. Yeah, this is the one, right? So basically what this shows is you have got, what if you have 1 into 20 megahertz, what if you have 20 into 1 megahertz, what if you have 10 into 2 megahertz, and so on. So it shows all these. Now, if you had no guard bands at all, yeah, right, you would just keep going. I mean, there's no reason to sort of, you know, cut down. But there are, and you cannot get these things really sharp. And as I mentioned, the sharper you make them, the more in time domain, so more ringing you have in multipath. So right, what the thing is that in our implementation, we have 100 kilohertz guard bands, and we really haven't tried lesser than that. What you have to really worry about is this 100 kilohertz divided by the width of the channel. So let's say you go one megahertz, then for every 1 megahertz, you're losing 100 kilohertz.
Yeah, definitely.
So that starts to come into picture. And that's the trade-off. So at least until 1 megahertz channels, we don't see things going bad. But I'm sure there is a limit to it, right? I mean, in the sense, the narrower you go, the more overheads you're going to take in terms of guard bands.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.